Thank you for listening to the Weekly Market Outlook. It is our pleasure to bring an industry-leading market analyst to provide you with the most value possible in your farm business. Please reach out anytime by emailing cbaron@agviewsolutions.com.
Welcome everyone to the AgView Pitch. This is Paul Niefer, and we're going to do our weekly market outlook. We have Jared Creed joining us today. How's the weather in Northeast Iowa, Jared?
We'll wait for 4 hours and it'll change again. How about that?
Yeah, I'm Colorado. Let's see, 3 days ago, it was a high of like 20, and today it's 65 and sunny. So, and like I say, tomorrow might be back to 20. But speaking of weather, and you and I are not weather experts, but, we know enough about farming. If we get too warm too quick, is that almost more of an issue of not being as warm, or what's your thoughts on that?
Oh, Paul, it's probably a little early to try to create too much of a bias on that. I think right now we just have to realize that absent of a big weather shift in the next 30 days, we're gearing up to have one of the faster planting paces that we've ever had.
Yeah.
So on the front end, that's obviously supportive for crop production, earlier planting, historical tendencies for what our final yields end up being based upon that faster planting. Long term, you still obviously have to put some moisture to the crop.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, there's plenty of concern in large swaths of U.S. corn and soybean production areas of being as dry as it is. But at the moment, I mean, I've heard plenty of individuals talk about this in the last week that they've got their anhydrous done, got any of the field work that they maybe need to get done, leveling stuff out prior to planting, that they're not going to have to be dodging any wet holes.
Yeah.
So when you think about just that little simple comment about not dodging wet holes, drown outs, that's more acres. You're planting more acres per field versus fields that possibly have, poor conditions at times. So at the moment, Paul, it just, absent of a weather change, we're going to plant this crop pretty darn fast. And if we are above 50% planted by the second week of May, that's when we have to start considering above trend type of yields, which is the exact same thing that happened last year. We were close to 60% planted. And when all the dust settled, we ended up being above trend.
Yeah. So, and I think even some of the marginal areas, let's say maybe North Dakota, parts of Minnesota and so on. When I say marginal, I'm just saying they tend to be wet. This time of year, as far as I know, they're not wet. So it'll be interesting.
There are plenty of individuals in that part of the world who are nervous because they have seen this story before, a very dry, open winter. And then April just slaps them upside the head.
Yeah.
So hopefully they don't have to fight that. But at the moment, there's just not much concern around any type of too wet situations.
Now, speaking of maybe I'm going to put a little optimistic spin on it. We were talking beforehand. What'd you say? We had 11 consecutive weeks of lower closes in corn. And this week, are we actually up from the previous week, or are we close to being up?
Well, I was referencing July corn and July soybeans in that conversation, and we nearly posted what you would call a key reversal in corn, which would be lower lows than the week prior and then higher highs than the week prior. We didn't quite get that done. Friday's price action just really didn't allow that to happen. But nonetheless, on the week, we were up approximately 10 cents in July corn, which from its absolute lows beginning of this week, it's rallied a pretty fair clip, especially on May corn. So does it really mean anything? Soybeans at the same time, 11 weeks consecutive lower closes. And this Friday, we posted a higher close for the first time. So if anything, I just want to emphasize that it's one less bearish notch in the belt. It's one slightly positive input into the market from a technical view that could possibly change some participants in the market, change their behavior a little bit. But make no doubt about it, I always like to coin it that it's New York money. New York money has this market, politically correct way to say, right where they want it. They have things just how they want it. They've made a lot of money. And without a doubt, I think some of the price action that we've seen in this last week, it does signify that the big speculative short position that's in place is getting trimmed ever so slightly, but well advertised for months upon months upon months here. The wet blanket on the market is the farmer still grossly undersold, selling into any type of a decent rally. If the farmer gets bowled up and decides to slow down selling, and we actually give the speculative community a reason to force them out instead of like choosing to get out, yeah, we could have a little bit more of a volatile move to the upside. But I think it's got to be kept in check. You know, opinions are opinions. We all know the saying on that. If I had to just make a wild guess here, Paul, it really wouldn't surprise me to see that July corn market try to reach back up to around the 460 area. Again, this is just a guess. It's not even a very confident opinion at the moment, but that would kind of be the top end of where I could see this thing going in a short while. And on the soybean side, maybe not quite as easy to try to justify some type of a possible bounce, because it's just been a straight elevator shaft down for almost $3 a bushel. Yeah. So basically from the beginning of November to present day, it's just been straight down.
Yeah.
Can we have a bounce that covers 50% of that move? I don't really think so at the moment. That would be a pretty big retracement. Never say never. Again, the issue, you have a North America farmer and a South America farmer that has a whole bunch of supply to offload and price, and that's going to make it pretty easy for the speculative community to cover their shorts.
Especially if we do have a pretty easy planting window and you get that crop in timely and the weather's looking okay. Now, as we know, especially where you're located and where my farm's located in Iowa, it's very dry there, but you know, these varieties have proven that even dry conditions, they can still kick out a pretty decent crop.
Correct. I believe there is plenty of unnecessary searching for some bullish item in the market. At the same time, the amount of bearish items that have kind of pushed us to where we are have somewhat subsided, just a little bit. You are getting into a time of the year where maybe you can just stack up a few supportive headlines, fundamental situations, what have you, that can provide us a little bit of life here. But I think, again, it's got to be kept within, it's got to be, don't have some pie in the sky, big rally coming around. It's got to be kept within expectations.
Yeah, be realistic about it. Now, we know at some point, and you hinted on it already, we know at some point the head or the specs are going to take their chips off the table, so to speak. And that should provide some type of a rally. You know, it might be 30 cents, it might be 50 cents, it might be a buck, but it should provide some rally. But historically, it always has. But they are close to being record short.
Here's our issue, Paul. The speculative community, let's just throw a number out there that they're short 325,000 contracts of corn currently. The farmer in the U.S. alone is 2 billion bushel behind selling pace. 2 billion bushel divided by 5,000 bushel is 400,000 contracts. There is a legitimate situation where you could see a wave of farmer selling coinciding with a wave of speculative money buying, and the market never moves to the extent that you would feel in a year where the supply is not hanging over the market to be sold.
Yeah, because a lot of those rallies in previous years didn't have that farmer overhanging the market. Is that correct?
Yes, and this could come back and bite me in the butt, but I don't see any type of situation that your speculative community is going to flip from the near record or record short that they currently hold to a long position. They're not going to do that. They're going to cover something. And can that provide a little bit of life to the market? Sure. If anything, the life to the market is it stops it from just going lower. Doesn't mean it's going to go higher.
And we already know that South America, what is 10 points ahead on planting the second crop of corn. So there's that supply coming on. And we had the final crop insurance prices. Why don't you, just for the listeners there, go through what the final two key prices, we won't talk about spring wheat unless you have that handy, but what was the final corn and soybean price?
$11.55 in soybeans, which is the lowest since 2020. Corn $4.65, which is the lowest since I believe $4.58 in 2021, something along those lines.
Was it $4.65 or $4.66? I think it was $4.66, wasn't it?
Unfortunately, if we have to end up depending on it, it's going to stink anyways. So, you know, give or take $1.30 off the last couple of years, $1.25 off the last couple of years. Soybeans off what, 2.25, 2.30 from the last couple of years. So, you know, it's a critical time for the next 2 weeks when producers are making their insurance selections. And all of our conversations with our clientele has been making its way through the office here for the last week or so. Conversation is really acknowledging that the revenue side of your multi-peril election, specific to downside price support, it's not going to be great. It's not going to give any type of attractive safety net. However, that cannot make a producer decide, well, I'm just not going to spend as much money on my insurance, because my concern would be that we're trying to shave off $5 or $10 an acre and lower coverage 5-10%. And then in the event we do have a couple things unfold, that grain is modestly higher and yields struggle a bit. You know, a perfect example, Paul, 200 bushel APH, 10% policy difference, that's 20 bushel an acre. And if I'm trying to shave off my coverage by saving $10, and all of a sudden we're at, say, $6 corn in October, and I don't raise those 20 bushel that I could have insured, I just tried to save $10 and cost myself $120 an acre. Bushels, twofold. In case you do have an issue, and probably more important, the ability to sell into a rally with the backstop of those guaranteed bushels. Because we know right now, we were just talking about market type of bounces. I would be shocked if the U.S. farmer doesn't aggressively catch up selling somewhere between 5 and 5.25 Dease corn if we're given that opportunity. But if an individual gets gun shy of doing it, it's probably because of a production concern. Right. When they need to take a step back and understand, again, you're guaranteed these bushels. And at the end of the day, you're just repricing your guarantee at that higher level that you sell on your own.
What's your thoughts on ECO or SCO?
It goes back to, again, your revenue policy is just not going to do much for you on the price side. But from a price perspective within ECO, it's got a lot more relevance. You know, a quick refresher for ECO and SCO for your listeners. It's a triggered event by the county, but ultimately your indemnities are going to be based upon your APH. So let's just say you lined up directly with the county. Let's just use beans for an example. Well, if our insurance price at $11.55, if we take 95% of that, that is going to be a price of about 62. They call it 1080, 1085. If price would slide below that, now you're talking about a required yield for the county to be up and above its expected county yield. Yeah. And there's always a situation that I think is probably more relevant in corn, that 95% of the insurance price will be somewhere right around $4.40 December corn. If we would go to $4, there's plenty of counties that would just never be able to out yield that drop in that revenue, which in essence is creating a hedge for the farmer somewhere in that $4.30 to $4.40 area if we're lower. And obviously the hope is that we are higher, getting to actually sell our physical crop for a higher price. So plus, there's still a lot of relevance. I would just say, I think I told Chris this last time, that you have to exhaust all the resources there. Don't just settle with what you know. Make sure you're looking at what else can be done.
Plus, if the harvest price ends up being higher, then the indemnity or the value of that contract also goes up. So it's just like your RP.
your insurance product has a value every single day from the second you plant that crop until expiration, the end of October.
Yeah.
And you always have the ability to self-control, you know, like a self-directed IRA, readjust the value of your insurance product on your own. Don't have to wait for the market to do it. You can do it yourself.
Okay. Anything else we should add? I mean, we've, like I say, we have a little bit of positive or maybe just a lack of bearish news this week. So anything else we should add before we sign off?
Oh, I'll just echo that one more time of what you said. Let's not get our hopes up. Keep an eye on a prize. I always hope that the group of listeners to the AgView Pitch, Christian Shea's group and your group, that we have heeded to the opportunities that have been presented to us in the last several years. And I would encourage folks to kind of get geared up for possible opportunities all the way out in 2025 here soon. Again, if we have some type of volatility in the next 60, 90 days, it's not all that far-fetched to think we can maybe be talking about above $5 corn for 2025. Now I'm getting a little optimistic that maybe input costs can slide a little bit lower. Modest drop from 2023 into 2024. Add another modest drop into 2025. We better be thinking about, can I make some money at $5 corn, especially if we're in a concern of going back to four. And I got no opinion if four is the new 330. Got no opinion if 450 is the new 350. I don't think that's something that we can really go down that path and bank on either.
Yeah. Well, and I think the wild card there too, in my opinion, is the fact that South America can just keep adding production and production, production. So we just can't view us as being an isolated market. Now, maybe SAF 5-10 years from now, maybe that'll be something that helps it out. But in the meantime, you know, the next 3 to 5 years, you got to be very precise with your marketing plan.
Yep. And I think just for your listeners, just a real quick plug, this is against my my MO, but our business ourselves, we have made a relatively substantial investment. I shouldn't say relatively. I hope it works because it's my butt on the line into this SAF space. We've launched a new business called Regenerative Root Solutions. And it's myself and two other business partners, and we are gearing up to get our producers in position to participate with what's coming down the pipeline in SAF, because the news in that space is getting faster and faster every single day. So I'd imagine here in a few more, maybe after spring planting, Chris and I will talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, and I think personally, and I'm sure you have an opinion on it. I mean, right now we're sort of relying on maybe the tax side, but I think eventually states and or government or the federal government are going to mandate it, just like ethanol. So I think that day's coming.
Yep.
So with that positive note, let's go ahead and end the AgView Pitch. This is the weekly market outlook, and this is Paul Niefer, and thanking Jaron Creed for being on, and go out and make some money this week.